That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 512. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, a little bit of Phil's news to get to here as we are in the middle of the Major League Baseball playoffs. The Phillies officially hired their hitting instructor. We talked about that a little bit last week, but it's now official. The Phillies also expected to announce their new infield coach and which player on the Phillies is going to have a busy offseason with both of those guys. Plus, we'll take a look at what the Phillies payroll for 2022 looks like at the moment. And then we'll dip into the Major League Baseball playoffs and we'll give you our thoughts on what's going on in the NLCS and the ALCS and some other stuff going around Major League Baseball. Joining me, as he does every week, is my good buddy Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus and all the great podcasts you hear him do here at the Good Fight podcast feed and on our Hittin' Season Patreon, which you can find by going to patreon.com/hittin'season. Follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. What's up, buddy?
You know, I can't wait to talk about payroll, have a payroll discussion with you as Red Sox fans have the time of their lives watching them annihilate the Astros, and you and I are sitting here talking about payroll in October. That's going to be, and I'm not insulting your topic selection skills.
Sure,
this is the situation, isn't it?
I hate it too. Yeah.
I do want to say that I don't think anybody would mistake my prediction that the Giants were going to win the World Series as support for the Giants. I don't think anybody would confuse it that. It was, of course, cushioning yourself. It's like it was my attempt. Like if you fall asleep and fall out a window, how if your body won't tense up before you hit the ground, so you won't get hurt as badly. And that's kind of that's the vibe I was going for there. And that the Giants are out of the postseason now. I honestly did not see that coming. I really thought their team of destiny vibes have moved firmly over to the Braves somehow. That was a narrative switch I did not see coming. But
no,
I'm happy.
I
mean, I'm not happy, but like, you know,
No one's happy. Yeah, no one's happy about anything.
That whoever emerges from this mess, out of four teams we hate, three of them will lose. Three of them will be upset. That's kind of nice. And one of them, the one that wins, will not be the Giants. So I am pleased by that. I'm pleased we don't have to talk about Gabe Kapler being a World Series champion all winter. Because, you know, the fact of the matter is, you can have that conversation anytime you want. What the Giants did this year was impressive without a World Series title. It was done. It was a done deal when they didn't flame out after the trade deadline.
And that series they had against the Dodgers was a pretty great series. I mean, that thing delivered on all fronts, went five games. When Darren Ruff hit that game-tying home run, Darren Ruff, of all people, playing postseason hero, I thought we were going to be thinking about that as the Darren Ruff game moving forward. But
me too. I was positive. I tweeted something about it, just knowing like Darren Ruff is a postseason hero. Yeah, absolutely. I saw that.
We live in that world, and on a team managed by Gabe Kapler, Darren Ruff was going to go down in postseason, in the annals of postseason glory. And listen, it was still a monster home run. It was a great moment for him as a guy who always liked Darren Ruff. I'm thrilled that he's found a niche in his career that really has suited him well out in San Francisco playing for Gabe Kapler. He's turned himself into a really valuable right-handed platoon outfielder, and you know, good for him. Fantastic for him that he's able to deliver in that moment and almost get the Giants to the NLCS. But unfortunately for him, not for us, because I am also very excited that the Giants did not make it, even if it was the Dodgers that got in over them. We're seeing the Dodgers and Braves going at it, and the Red Sox and Astros going at it. We'll get to those two series coming up here in just a couple of minutes. First, let's get the Phillies news out of the way. And obviously, there's not a lot of big Phillies news going on at this time of year. The postseason awards won't be announced for a little while yet. The Phillies are just making some minor staff changes. You and I last week talked about the fact that they were going to hire Kevin Long. That news was breaking as we were recording the podcast last week. The team did make it official this week, and he spoke to the media. And Kevin Long is the greatest hitting coach in the history of the world narrative has been spinning. The Nationals, I think one of the things that you did see that he did well with the Nationals, and the Nationals were one of the best fastball hitting teams in baseball, and he really stresses that. And I think one of the things that this Phillies team really had trouble with this year, a couple different things offensively. One, they really struggled hitting fastballs. They were one of the worst fastball hitting team in Major League Baseball, which is just crazy because when you think about what your job is as a hitter, it's to get yourself into fastball counts, right? I mean, that's the whole point of it. Get yourself 2-0, get yourself 3-1, put the pitcher in a position, you know, get on base, get runners on base so that a pitcher has to throw strikes, he has to throw you fastballs. And the Phillies so many times this year just gotten fastball counts and weren't able to do anything with it. And so that's one of the main areas that Kevin Long is going to be really working on. And you know, I think just trying to figure out Alec Boehm is the other thing. And that's what you keep hearing from folks is his main project, just like Joe Dillon's main project last year or the year before was fixing Rhys Hoskins. That's going to be the Alec Boehm. That's going to be Kevin Long's project is fixing Alec Boehm this offseason. And it seems like it should be something that could be possible because Alec Boehm has talent, former number 3 overall pick. It should be, if this guy's as good as he says he is and everybody says he is, he should be able to quote-unquote fix Alec Boehm, right?
Yeah, I mean, why not? And we kind of talked about last time that with these kind of hires, it's always tough to see how successful it was until it's over. And in the case of Long, he was at least one point in his career something no one wants to be anymore, which is hired by the New York Mets back in the mid-2010s. But, you know, his track record, you know, it's not like – I feel like the Phillies have rolled the dice a couple times here and hired somebody who has no experience at the job they're asking them to do. And you know, that's how you unearth new talent, you know, believing someone's bold new plan, bold new vision is how these teams get labeled innovative and revolutionary. But in the Phillies case, they just haven't had that luck. So you look back at Kevin Long's resume and I mean, like you said, he's going to teach them to do something basic again and have them just kind of like approach this game, without layers and layers and layers of data across it. Hopefully not no data, but you know, I think we all know the counterbalancing routine going on here. And again, looking at his history, the hitters that he's coached, I mean, the last great Phillies manager was a hitting coach who managed Hall of Fame talent when Charlie Manuel was in Cleveland. So that Kevin Long shows up having coached, you know, the 2009 Yankees, the World Series winning Nationals team, Juan Soto, you know, Derek Jeter, A-Rod. It's not like he was sitting there providing them with their powers or whispering secret phrases to unlock them. But, you know, those offenses did what they did, and he was the hitting coach when they did it. You know, the Yankees had a down year in 2008, so you can also credit him for that, I guess. But the next year, yeah, they scored the most runs in the American League. So if you are evaluating a hitting coach's abilities, there's got to be some form of metric in how many successful offenses has he coached, has he been the coach for. And at the very least, these guys who were supposed to play well did. And it tells you that he knows how to coach superstar talent, which the Phillies have a little bit of, and he knows how to perhaps work with younger hitters like Alec Boehm, who need to relearn how to find that consistency at the plate. So yeah, it's not the worst news in the world. It wasn't a name that got tweeted out, and we all said who, or we Googled him, and we're like, they hired a guy who did this. Oh my God! Like it wasn't a disaster. It was just a hire.
Right. Well, I think part of what gives me a little bit of pause with the Alec Boehm thing was, and as somebody who lives in the D.C. area, I've seen a lot, I've watched a lot of Nationals games over the years, and I know part of the issue that they've had, yes, Juan Soto came up to the big leagues and has essentially been Ted Williams since he got here, and that's not an exaggeration. You look at the numbers he's put up and the type of hitter he is. He's this generation's Ted Williams. He's that good a hitter. No, I mean, seriously. I mean,
no, it's not surprising. It's just always he puts out the kind of stats and the kind of like facts like that you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like you got to use names like Ted and Mickey and stuff when you're talking
about it. It's rarefied air. He's that good. But I don't – he has not had a great track record with younger players. Victor Robles was supposed to be this really hot young prospect a few years ago. His offensive career has never taken off. Carter Kieboom was a guy that was supposed to be a major part of what the Nationals were going to do last year and this year, and he has yet to be able to really take off. And so, you know, I wonder.
Kieboom was considered one of their top pieces. Man, he did
a couple years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple years ago, Kieboom came up with a lot of fanfare, and
that's right.
He was supposed to be there. He was the Anthony Rendon replacement. I mean, kind of like kind of like the Phillies had Dominic Brown ready to replace Jason Wirth a few years ago. Carter Kieboom was, you know, Kieboom wasn't rated as high as Dominic Brown was in the prospect rankings, but he was the Nationals' top position player prospect when he first came up. So,
well, this is part of what we're saying, that it's difficult to gauge these guys, because here I am sitting here saying, oh, look at these young hitters he's worked with, and you know, the truth is that actually no, his track record is poor.
Well, but you've seen he's also done. He's the guy who turned Daniel Murphy's career around. Like he got Daniel Murphy to be a different kind of hitter. You know,
John,
what I mean?
I feel like you just keep pulling the rug out from under me here.
I'm not trying to.
If the goal of the episode today is humiliation of me, I feel like I should tell you my birthday was yesterday, and this just feels really mean.
Oh, I'm sorry. happy birthday, pal. No, you're not. What I'm trying to get at is with hitting coaches. We have no idea.
No.
If this guy, like the track record of somewhere else, it doesn't matter.
And it's also probably, it's definitely more about the individual, I'm going to say, connection or lack thereof. Just like the relationship you have with the various hitters. You know, I feel like there's plenty of hitters, even young hitters, who are like, you gotta work on something, but they're there personally. Like, no, I don't. Like, no, I don't need to work on that. You know, you gotta work around relationship obstacles like that occasionally. So I think it's very much based on its one-on-one dynamics. And those are versatile in a single clubhouse, let alone many across a career.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I remember when John Mailey first came aboard, we were all, you know, people were gushing. He comes from the Astros and the Cubs, and the Astros have all these great young players, and the Cubs had just won the World Series a couple of years ago. And so he's going to come in here and he's going to take this Phillies offense and make it into the Cubs or the Astros. And obviously that didn't happen. And so I just feel like with this guy, you know, just like any other position coach, any pitching coach that they bring in, I mean, they're not hiring a pitching coach, but they just did last year, Caleb Cottom. Not a whole lot was different with this pitching staff with Caleb Cottom this year than last year. Zach Wheeler was a whole lot better. Aaron Nola was a lot worse.
Zach Eflin did gush over Cottom. That's true.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were optimistic, and that's because when all of these guys get hired, all the pieces get written about all the optimism that there is with these different players and with these different coaches, and you want to believe that you're getting good people in place to help. Now, we've talked about this a lot before. Part of the issue, especially with the younger players, with the Phillies, could be they're being told to do one thing in the minors and then told to do something else in the majors. And hopefully Dave Dombrowski is sorting all that kind of stuff out right now, and that might set up Kevin Long in a position to succeed where maybe his predecessors were not able to succeed. But, you know, I always want to pump the brake on. I'm now moving forward, pumping the brake on all these guys, and you just have to see if they get results, because I can't get excited about a new hitting coach. I don't care what he's done before. With this group of players and with what's been going on with this team these last 10 years, I don't know. I don't know. So
I mean, I know people like to throw the cliche, "What have you done for me lately?" around, like it's a bad thing most of the time. But in this case with the Phillies, like, come on, we're all pretty numb here. Like, you can hire whoever you want. Let's just fast forward to the season, and if the team's doing well, great, good hire. But I'm not going to sit here and you know, find reasons to believe that, nope, this guy, the whole time this guy's got the keys. We should have had here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The Phillies, Jim Salisbury announced or mentioned in an article, that actually was in a Kevin Long piece that he wrote, was that they're also expected to announce Bobby Dickerson as their new infield coach again. Okay, you know, I mean,
really going down the ladder of coaching that you know care about, maybe hitting, maybe pitching.
you can tell how bad a year, by the way, Alec Bohm had, when not only is Alec Bohm going to be Kevin Long's main project this year, Alec Bohm will probably also be Bobby Dickerson's major project this offseason.
Even more so. You know, Alec Bohm figured out how to hit a line drive in the major leagues like by the second half. He was actually connecting at a pretty steady clip. He wasn't getting a lot of extra base hits, which is, that's part of him he's got to relearn and unlock. But the defense is, to me, I mean, maybe you disagree, but I think that's a much deeper hole for him to climb out of, because he looked like he did not know how to field his position. And the Phillies came out and basically they said, well, we're moving forward. We're considering third base a checkbox with Alec Bohm in it next year. So that's not going to be something we are saying that we're going to focus on in free agency or just, you know, moving pieces around. Like he's going to be it over there. So hope he gets a new glove or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm starting to feel like Alec Bohm is, and the Phillies are going to make some moves this offseason and bring in some new people in different places. But Alec Bohm may be the key to this team being successful. I mean, aside from Bryce Harper being good and JT Realmuto being good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like those that's guys a tough to statement good. To make because you're assuming things will stay the
yes.
same. But we learned
yes.
this year that
yes.
actually some pre-established success stories can turn into failures.
Well, that's true too, I suppose. But the Phillies, they desperately need one of their young guys to come in here and play well. And you're right. You're totally right. I the reason he got benched by Girardi was because of the glove. He couldn't field his position. And you could see it was starting to take a mental toll on him last year. You know, and I don't know how much the offense, his lack of offensive production early in the season was affecting his defense and then vice versa as the season went along. But it became really toxic. And I know during the course of the season, there were a lot of us who thought, well, maybe they might shift him to the outfield with Andrew McCutchen leaving this offseason. But you're right. It sounds like they want to keep him at third base. And so Bobby Dickerson is going to have to teach him how to catch ground balls and then throw them to first, which, again, I'm sure there are drills that they will have him go through and things that they will do. But, I mean, it's catch. It's this is an act, an activity that he has been doing every day for the last how many years. And I'm just like, if you're not at a point where you can like just make the routine plays at third base, that's all we're looking for him to do, is to make the routine plays at third base. I gotta feel like if you're, you know, and that may be one of the reasons Juan Castro got fired, is because he couldn't figure out how to get Alec Bohm to make the routine plays. I just, like, what is, and this may just be my ignorance of what coaches do, but what's Bobby Dickerson going to do that Juan Castro wasn't doing? I don't know. But, again, hope springs eternal. So, you know, we'll see if Bobby.
That's a pretty good reason to fire an infield coach. It's like, look, this guy was part of our future. That we were really, really relying
sure.
on this. More so with you know, every trade that dealt away almost major league ready prospects, and it just came down to Bohm and Howard at the top of the Philly system. Like we were leaning on this guy being a central
yeah.
piece moving forward on both sides of the ball. Like I don't think people believed his third base career was going to be prolifically long in Major League Baseball. I think there were a lot of assumptions mm-hmm. about him getting moved across the diamond at some point for whatever reason, but this was a central pillar that collapsed. And if you're
yeah.
the coach that can't figure out, like, even just to, because if you're describing it's almost like it was the yips, like maybe he was having a bad season, but then he just forgot how to play baseball. And that's almost encouraging because you can figure that out. Like, you can,
yeah.
the yips are solvable. Other stuff that might be a little deeper that's just fundamental to who he is as a defender, you know, that's a little tougher. But I think that's a good reason to fire your infield coach if you're,
oh, yeah.
Like, look, this guy, he's right, he's, his glove doesn't go where the ball is on routine plays. You gotta help us out here. This is literally your job. And then three months later, still not working. And star
right.
player who was supposed to be middle of the order bat and consistent presence in the lineup is down in the minors while the team is making what it's calling a playoff push, but is really just a long, sad surrender. So, yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good reason to swap out your infield coach, because maybe Dickerson can do something Castro couldn't.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just a different voice. Like we
yeah.
always hear people say, you just need a different voice. So that announcement hasn't been made official yet, but it seems as though that's the direction they're going to go. But they're going to need a new infield coach, whether it's Bobby Dickerson or somebody else. Alec Bohm is going to be getting a lot of attention this offseason. Real quick, Jim Salisbury for NBC Sports Philadelphia had a piece looking at the payroll for 2022, and this is a team that is going to stay under the luxury tax, and I think you and I both believe this team will not go over the luxury tax this offseason. There's not going to be a lot of room to maneuver. So here are the players who are hitting free agency. You've got Andrew McCutchen, who is going to accounting for $16.7 million in terms of luxury tax. Odubel Herrera, the Phillies are going to buy out the last 2 years of his deal. They're not bringing him back. That's going to save a little over $6 million. You've got Ian Kennedy, Hector Neris, Archie Bradley, Brad Miller, Freddie Galvis, Matt Moore, Cam Bedrosian. So with Hector Neris, $5 million is saved if they don't bring him back. Archie Bradley, you save $6 million if they don't bring him back. Brad Miller, $3.5 million. Matt Moore, $3 million. I mean, some of these guys are probably going to come back. Are there any of these guys, Justin, that you would want them to bring back? And if so, if there's any of these guys you are kind of on the fence about, is how much of a pay drop would you want them to take in order to bring them back into the fold?
I was looking at this list earlier, and I think the only person that I would say as an answer to that question is Hector Neris. I guess maybe Bradley, but he said, you know, he put a post on Instagram saying thank you Philly with like a bunch of, you know, a couple of pictures of everything. So you kind of got the sense, the vibes at least, yeah, that he, yeah, was considering his time in Philly over.
We'll never forget you, Archie.
Yeah,
we'll never forget.
Thought that was gonna go
yeah,
better.
Yeah, Bradley. So did I.
but yeah, I guess Neris, because you know there's always a debate surrounding him. I think he finished this season on a good note. Even in fan perception, I think he finished the season on a good note. Everybody else there is exactly the kind of person that, like, the Phillies aren't going to rebuild. They're not going to clear the deck. But this feels like a way to appease the people calling for that, because it is a lot of players, none of whom are really central to the field. I mean, Neris is the most central, I think, of these guys. I mean, if you consider Odubel Herrera the everyday center fielder, like, you know, not just because that's where Girardi kept putting him, but like you feel like he's capable of that job. I don't. If you feel like he is, then I guess you could call him a central player as well. And McCutcheon, yeah, he's been a starter, but he, you know, he hasn't really been here that long. And everybody else is like, you know, Galvis came this year, Matt Moore, Cam Bedrosian. Like, yeah, this is nobody that's necessarily going to make the team better. And I feel like, especially in Brad Miller's case, This is a great example of someone you could find to do his job for less, like pretty easily.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of Brad Millers running around at this point because he had a couple of great moments, but he did not have a great season.
My man hit 20 home runs. I was surprised he had 20 home runs, but the batting average was really bad. He didn't get on, but he was a guy who hit for some power. I wouldn't mind bringing him back because. Yeah, he
hits them so far.
Oh my gosh, he does. It's incredible how
he's
hard
not
he
like a monster at the plate either. He's like, you know, he's not like a
scarecrow. He doesn't wear batting gloves. Yeah,
yeah, he's got that. No. Yeah, he can send him far.
No, so I wouldn't mind him as a lefty bench bat. I think that's fine. He was forced into playing too much because of all the injuries. I mean, I wouldn't mind bringing him back for about the same kind of money because I think he's a good bench guy. I think if that's what you have him for. If that's what the Phillies could have used him as this year, I think he would have done really well. I agree with you about Neris. I think he works as a setup guy. I think he works real good as a seventh and eighth inning guy. I would even consider on a pay reduction. I'd consider bringing Ian Kennedy back in a non-closer's role, simply because there's not a lot of great options out there. You could get somebody like Corey Knebel from the Dodgers, but you know, there's two closers out there, and that's Iglesias and Kenley Jansen. And so, you know, it's I don't know what they're going to do about the bullpen, but I would consider bringing Kennedy back for less money. I would bring Neris back for about the same kind of money. And then I would probably say goodbye to everybody else. If Brad Miller comes back for a $2 million deal or something like that, okay, I might be willing to do that. But, you know, there's also going to be pay raises to a couple of different guys. You know, you're going to have to do arbitration increases for guys like Rhys Hoskins, you know? So there are going to be some of that going around. So it looks as though the Phillies already have about $170 million committed towards 2022. So that only leaves them with about $40 million before you get to about $210 million, which I think just is ballpark about where the luxury tax is going to kick in. For 2022, and we still don't know what the CBA is going to look like here, and that's another part of the equation, and that's why I think it's going to be a slow offseason to start. We don't know what the, you know, what if there's going to be a change in the penalties for going over the luxury tax, if it's going to increase, if it's going to decrease, if the luxury tax is going to go away, if it's going to be a salary cap. I mean, we don't know what the CBA is going to look like, and so it could all be moot based on whatever happens with the negotiations, but. Right now, $40 million with all those holes to fill. Anybody dreaming of Corey Seager or Trevor Story or somebody like that, I just don't see it, guys, because there's a lot of different places this team needs help. They've got to build a bullpen again. You know, they've got to find a closer. They've got to find somebody to pitch the ninth inning, and they got to get, like, Dombrowski said, they got to get a middle of the order bat. They got to get a couple out. They got to get a leadoff hitter. I mean, there's a lot they have to do, and I think they got to spread the money around because there's no way they're going to spend $20, $30 million on a single player.
I think that the Phillies are going to do one or two things this winter that like genuinely excite people roster wise. Movement wise, and then like a bunch of the other moves are going to just be like, okay, you know, just like this is not necessarily a bad move, but yeah, not certainly not a thrilling move, because you're right that like it's exciting to think of them just diving into that shortstop market like they they're never going to run out of money, but at the same time, there's just simply too much that's not working here. There's just too much change being necessitated by, you know, this arena specifically. Like, they need to acquire new players for some positions, better players. They're letting an era slip through their fingers if they don't. Mm-hmm. So they must know they're costing themselves money, or I hope they know. This is how you're going to fix that. And there's just too much going on to focus it all in one area. So yeah, I'm with you on that. And I feel like looking at this list, I was going to say there's nobody who I'd be mad about seeing again, but I'd be mad if I saw them all again. But that's not true. I'd be mad if Odubel Herrera came back at this point. I'd be mad if Matt Moore was back at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Through that this year. I'd be like, oh, really? Like you said, in some cases, like Kennedy's case, like the other options out there, it's not like they're much better. Okay. But in some of these cases, it's like we just need to see a different face doing that. Even if it wants to be as bad as that guy was, just a different guy would be great,
right?
For me, emotionally.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I agree. I know some of these guys we just did, they got to go. They just got to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see what else Dombrowski does as far as if he feels the roster needs a real true shakeup, and if so, which of the existing core players might be on the move. And maybe next time we chat when we have Liz. And Liz will be with us probably again next week. She's in the midst of a hair-raising move from one place to the other. And so she's getting all those ducks in a row. So we'll be talking to her on the podcast again next week. But we could talk about the core and which guys are most likely to stay and which most likely to go. And maybe we'll do that on the next episode of the podcast. But let's take our break here. When we come back, we'll dip into the MLB playoffs, talk about the NLCS, the ALCS, and a couple other things as well. We'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so let's jump into the MLB playoffs a little bit. And the championship series are both in full swing in the National League and American League, first in the NLCS. The Atlanta Braves up to a 2-0 lead, surprisingly. Now, the first two games have been in Atlanta, so the Braves have had the home field advantage. So we'll see how the Dodgers do when they get back to L.A. I saw someone online, Justin, compare, and I thought this was interesting. Compare the Braves, this year's Braves, to the 93 Phillies and the Dodgers to the 93 Braves in terms of like wins and losses and, you know, how the teams played during the course of the regular season. I think the 93 Phillies, obviously they got off to a real hot start and then kind of cruised in the second half once they built a big lead. But they were I think they won 96 games or 97 games that year. 97. Obviously a better record than this year's Braves team. Was it 97?
Yeah. I'm not looking at it, but I'm going from memory, and I'm pretty sure that's right.
Okay. So I think that 93 Phillies team was a little bit better than this Braves team, but the Dodgers team this year was very much like that 93 Braves team that got beat by the Phillies in the 93 NLCS. And I do get that vibe, you know, like this Phillies this Braves team is – it's an underdog, right? I mean, this is an underdog, scrappy team. They should not be able to beat this Dodgers team that won 106 games during the course of the season. But here they are with a 2-0 series lead just 1 year after the Braves had the Dodgers in a 3-1 series hole. So I was kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the 93 comparisons here with the Braves and the Dodgers.
You know, back in 2010, somebody said, well, I guess this is how... Now we know how the 93 Braves felt when the Giants beat the Phillies in the NLCS. And, like, okay, I hear you, and I hear this comparison, but, like, I think this mostly has just become a season and a team people reach for when they're just describing a pretty normal underdog and opposite of an underdog. What's the word I'm looking for here? Defending, yeah, just a better team and a team that's, like, scrappier. It feels like that's just the comparison we're making here. I don't know if there's anything that, like, if you, first of all, you probably don't want to be told your close to the 93 Phillies, if you're going by like, we like them, you know, personality wise. Like, I don't know if you're allowed to be a team like the 93 Phillies were anymore. But yeah, I feel like that's getting more and more common comparison, especially for Phillies people, when they see like a bad team, not a bad team, but like the underdog succeeding against the team they're playing, basically. Because that's kind of what's happening here. It's not like the Braves are this like wild macho row type of team. Like they're not. I don't think the similes
right. No. Yeah. Not personality. Yeah.
Yeah. After the record, and that's what I think. You got to use when you're reaching for that 93 Phillies comparison is like the culture of the team, because that's right. what was like, obviously they were great, but like that's what stood out and that's what stands out in people's memories. When you're just making this comparison, all you're really saying to me is that like, yeah, wow, that team I expected to lose this series is winning it.
You're right. It is a kind of an easy thing to go back and pull from. But I think it was interesting with the Braves here, because now it's the Braves on the other side of the mirror, you know, like,
you know, the part of this is coming from in your show outline. You wrote the phrase, "You have to admire Atlanta." And I would just, I've just been mad all day since I read that.
Yeah.
I don't have to. It's like when someone tells you you have to respect George Steinbrenner. No, I don't. I don't respect George Steinbrenner.
I think you have to.
No, Justin, you have to. I mean, I have a hard time watching the Braves have fun, just because I think I just really hate the Braves. Like they're a team that I don't like when they succeed. I don't like seeing them succeed. And the Dodgers, I'm a little more indifferent about. So I don't want to think about them that way, and I don't want to admire them. But as I think we're going to talk about. What they did this season is, on the one hand, you could say it's not super impressive, because all they had to do was pull their head out of the muck of the NL East and take like a giant breath to get into the playoffs, and everybody else just like squirmed and died below the surface. It like was not a difficult division to win, I wouldn't say, this season. So that they like had to take all season to win it, I'd say is a mark against them. But that being said, yeah, what they did in the way that like they ran into that they lost the one guy that everyone would agree they couldn't lose in Ronald Acuña, managed to rebuild their outfield, get performances from guys that they, you know, that were better than where they were earlier in the season.
Yeah.
Like almost an opposite of what we've experienced in Philadelphia when we've picked up guys to help the team mid-year. And
yes,
it's just one of those things where you're just like, really? Okay, well, that's what it takes. It doesn't just take Bryce Harper in the middle. It doesn't just take the kind of guys Pat Gillick would pick up, you know, the Matt Stairs and the Joe Blantons of the world who fill out the roster and have big moments you remember them for. It doesn't just take that. It takes this kind of stuff. It takes this where suddenly Jorge Soler is having a great year when before he was not. He was just helicoptering at the plate in Kansas City.
It's frustrating because the Braves' moves at the trade deadline felt a lot like the types of moves that the Phillies made in 2018 when they got Asdrubal Cabrera and Wilson Ramos and Justin Bour and Jose Bautista. You know, they went out and they got these guys who, you know, you knew they were kind of a lot of them past their primes. Or in terms of Cabrera was having a really good season and then came to Philadelphia and was generally lousy. Wilson Ramos had a good season with the Phillies but could barely play because he was injured all the time. I mean, they've had no luck when it comes to adding players at the trade deadline in recent seasons, especially with bullpen acquisitions, as we well know. And the Braves got Adam Duvall for Alex Jackson. They got Jock Peterson for Bryce Ball. They got Eddie Rosario for Pablo Sandoval. They got Jorge Soler for Casey Kalick. None of these are prospects the Braves are going to miss. And they've all come through. I mean, all of them have come through with huge moments in the regular season and the postseason. And so anybody who doesn't think that a lot of this is just flat out luck is crazy, because it is. This is so much of this is just luck. So much of what's happened to the Phillies over the last 10 years, it is a lot of stupidity, but a lot of it is also just dumb, awful, blind, bad luck that some of this stuff just hasn't worked out. Like as for the Braves, who just kind of has stumbled into all of the perfect replacements to make up for the fact that they lost the National League MVP Ronald Acuña midway through the season. It's complete luck.
The one that floors me is Pablo Sandoval. I mean, you say these aren't prospects they're going to miss. I mean, good Lord. They got Eddie Rosario was like a key member of the Braves this year.
Game-winning hit in game two,
They got him from Pablo Sandoval, who, by the way, Pinch hit at least once, maybe more, home runs against the Phillies to like
two in the first like 3 weeks of the season, I think it was.
Yeah, beat them or send a game into extra innings. I know that game in May that the Braves won three times in a single game.
Right.
He was responsible for that. Yeah. So they got everything they could out of Pablo Sandoval to get to the playoffs, and then Eddie Rosario, the guy they got for trading him, becomes a playoff hero. I mean, like, we're trying not to swear on this podcast, but like, get the heck out of here with that. That's insane. Cause like you said, so much of this comes down to luck, and I don't know, maybe it's different. The guys who go to Atlanta seem like they want to be there. And, I'm not saying that's the opposite is necessarily true in Philadelphia, but you catch a look in somebody's eye sometimes that makes you wonder. Didn't really feel like a lot of people were excited to be on the Phillies this year. A lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time. And in the case of the Braves, it just worked. They did something and it worked. I mean, I'm not going to say I admire it, but I will say that I have watched and not considered it a failure.
Sure, exactly. All right, well, last thing on this series, what do you think the odds are the Dodgers come back here? I mean, they are the better team. They've now got three games in a row in LA. Atlanta's playing pretty well, but they're also winning these games by the skin of their teeth. These walk-off wins, they've got good pitching. They've been pitching really well, but Freddie Freeman has been in a huge slump in the first two games, 0-for-8 with 7 strikeouts so far. Freddie Freeman, my goodness. Wow. And they've won these two games. It kind of feels like that the Braves are kind of walking on dry spaghetti. Like, I'm just a little concerned. Not concerned. That's terrible. That's not even close to how I feel about this. I'm intrigued as to whether or not the Braves will be able to hold on and keep the Dodgers from coming back for a second straight year.
Yeah, you know, it would be easy to say yes based on what we've seen the last few nights, but I honestly don't feel too stupid saying that I think the Dodgers will at least tie the series up. Going to LA just alone, just getting back to their home turf, and like you said, they are the better team. Like they are, and they could lose this series, and that would still be true going into it. I mean, that's why we were talking about the comparison somebody made earlier. So, and like you said, when you win these two games by the skin of your teeth at home, it doesn't necessarily feel like, you know, you're going to walk into the Dodgers house and take care of business. The Dodgers roster is built for this. They have star power at the front to shut you down, and they've got depth for days to hold everything else up and hold it all together. So the same strengths that let them beat the Giants, a team I thought was the team of destiny, the Dodgers took care of them pretty handedly. So I know I do feel like they can tie it back up at least.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the playoffs, I actually picked the Braves to go to the World Series just because I felt like it was a little too easy to pick the 107 and 106 win teams. But, you know, as this series rolls along, I feel like just something tells me the Dodgers are going to come back and crush the Braves' spirit once again for a second straight year. And I'm going to have to find some way to live with that. And it's going to be really hard, but we're going to manage to soldier on. As we are recording this, they're playing game 3 of the ALCS right now. And the Boston Red Sox are, my goodness, their offense is just ridiculous. We're recording this now in the 6th inning, and the Red Sox have an 11-3 lead over Houston. So Boston's going to take a 2-1 lead, barring a miracle comeback from the Astros in this game. They've hit 3 grand slams in this series alone in these last two games, Game 2 and Game 3. The offense of Boston is just, it's murdering people right now. And I had, you know, I'd followed Boston just ever so slightly this year. Like, I wasn't paying much attention to the AL East. My focus, our focus was mostly on the NL East. But looking at the lineup, it's unbelievable. They have a dominant lineup. And I look at the Astros lineup, and that's an awfully good lineup too. But with Kyle Schwarber healthy in there, there's not an easy out in that lineup, and they are murdering the Astros, whose pitching staff is weaker this year than in previous runs through the AL playoffs. So I don't know which team has the better offense here. Is it Boston or is it Houston?
Well, this is timely because it sounds like Kike Hernandez was brought out of the game in Boston. But I wrote, I think, a series preview over at Baseball Prospectus. And all I could do about when talking about the Red Sox offense was talk about Kike Hernandez. He has been just otherworldly in the contributions he's been able to make. The way he's hitting the ball is exactly you need a guy like this to get as hot as he is to have a successful playoff run. I think even Chase Utley made a comment about it today because they were like buddies in Los Angeles. So yeah, I at this point I'm feeling like the Red Sox offense is definitely fully primed. And writing about this series, yeah, you really do see how both of these teams are set up to utterly dominate you at the plate, and I think both have done so to their opponents throughout the postseason thus far. But in this particular,
by the way, Red Sox have hit 19 home runs in this postseason, the second most by a team through 8 games of a postseason, behind only the 2004 Astros, who had 20 through the first 8 games. I just wanted to drop that in there. That's incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, even beyond Kike Hernandez, Kyle Schwarber has been what an acquisition for the Red Sox this year. Like he's there's players who like you don't realize how good a fit they are until they get to the place. Like I never thought about him on the Red Sox, but then you know, seeing Kyle Schwarber on the Red Sox, I'm like, that guy was born to be on the Red Sox. This sucks. Yeah. But he's been great for them. Rafael Devers, like they are just they're loaded. Honestly, at this point, they're probably the team I can get the most enjoyment out of watching.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. Like, which of these four teams is basically the most likable or rootable team? You know, if you had to pick one of these four to win it all, is it Boston? It's probably Boston for me.
Yeah, I think for me it's Boston. You know, I was thinking about this earlier. The Braves, I think, are probably the national darling. But being Phillies fans, you see that Braves uniform and you're just turned off. The Dodgers, I don't fault them too much. But sometimes I default to I'd rather root for the underdog than the team that was set up to win. So that's always the Phillies or the Dodgers will always be the favorites in series this year. So even if they go to the World Series, just statistically, and obviously, you know, Astros are still obnoxious. The way that situation, like the fallout from the scandal and everything, has evolved to this point, how it's all just like Astros writers or national writers deciding that their angle is going to be, well, it makes the team like sad when you boo them, or Carlos Correa making his comments, like whatever stupid thing he has to say now. Mm-hmm. That's like, what? Like, I'm a villain now, but also it was complicated and I'm not ashamed of myself, but also I have credibility and integrity. And yeah, you know, he's got a million different excuses for whatever you're talking about. So no to the Astros. And yeah, that really, you know, at this point, that leaves just the one team. And the thing about the Red Sox that offends me is, you know, again, the Red Sox-ness of them, not really any individual players. But we don't get fully exposed to that over in the NL anyway. So I instinctively am like, or at least bored. You know, I'm turned off by the Yankees. I'm bored by the Red Sox typically. So when they play each other, it sucks. But yeah, in this particular case, I'm willing to make an exception and I've been trying to do the past few years, look at the playoffs without the Phillies in it and just like, you know, don't think about the uniforms. Just try to enjoy the baseball.
Right, just try to enjoy the game.
It's really tough. Yeah. I can't say I've succeeded, it does. The playoffs have become more fun for me, even without the Phillies in them.
I agree too. I'm largely able. I mean, I think the Braves Dodgers series has been incredibly exciting. They're two really good games so far. So if you just enjoy tense playoff baseball, you can enjoy these playoff series, even if they involve teams that are not very likable. By the way, the Red Sox now have 10 or more hits in 6 straight playoff games, the longest streak within a single postseason all time.
Yeah, you see what I'm talking about?
that's some stuff right there. All right, let's finish this thing off with some final thoughts. Justin, any final thoughts before we wrap up episode number 512?
Hey, you know, the Flyers played tonight. Real hockey took on Seattle Kraken, stomped them utterly. And hey, that's always a good time when hockey's back. I'm trying to phrase this in a not too negative, grim way, but it's just always fun to watch the cycle of Philadelphia sports teams as the calendar continues. You and I and Liz are, you know, we were in pretty dark places. Now we're just kind of like in our off-season cocoons. Talking about the team as needed, but not super excited about them after another long season in which they let us down. Eagles fans are kind of, and I know there's a lot of overlap between these groups, but Eagles fans are a little deadened by the team's start and the slow realization. Well, faster than slow realization that the team's just not going to be good this year. And then Sixers fans are caught up in the Ben Simmons drama. So that's also, that's whatever that is. But in the Flyers case, like, they started the season and they played a really good game. And I'm seeing like a bunch of fans being like, I told you the Flyers were going to be a fun team. Like, I told you this is going to be fun. This is going to be great. And all I could think was like the end of last hockey season when Flyers fans were the most burned out and depleted, just a godforsaken wasteland. And I'm not saying that they're destined for that this season. I'm just saying it is always entertaining to watch the, because like as fickle or as frustrated as we can get about these teams, we keep coming back. And it's just funny funny to be more mindful of the temperaments from start to end of each season.
We keep coming back, and we, because there's always the hope, there's always the belief that they're going to make it worth our while. And you know, I have lost my I have not been as engaged with the Flyers in recent years. When I was a kid, I was a huge Flyers guy. Like during the, you know, during the starting from like the Rick Tocchet, Tim Kerr era days to the you know, Keith Primo, Eric Lindros, John LeClair, all those days, and even you know, when they went on that run back in, what was that, 2010, was it, when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals? So yeah, that was a lot of fun, but I just I wasn't even tracking the Flyers at this point. Yeah, hey, good for Flyers fans, get off to a good start, and just, you know, guard your hearts, Flyers fans. All right, they're gonna come for you. Guard your hearts, because it's a long season. There's still 81 more of those things to go. All right, folks. Well, listen, that's going to do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin for joining me on the podcast once again. And hey, folks, make sure to check out the latest Dirty Inning on the Apple, on the Good Fight podcast feeds. You can get it at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. All the other great podcasts we have for you there. And don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. We've got some new stuff for you over there, too. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season. Yeah, that's the right URL. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.